Getting up, I walk out of the restaurant, my stomach rumbling at the delicious smells emanating from the kitchen. If all goes well, I'll eat here for real one day, with Sarah by my side. Chapter 31. Peter. I don't have to wait long for Esquerra's answer. His email is in my inbox by the time I get back to my hotel. Tonight at 7, the message reads, Lucas will pick you up. 7 is only a half hour away, so I swiftly notify my guys and get ready. Kent shows up at my hotel room promptly at 7. I'm not at all surprised that he knows where I'm staying. I knew I was being tailed from the second I left the restaurant. Kent's face might as well be hewn from granite. No weapons, he says, and I lift my arms, letting him frisk me from head to toe. He finds the knife in my boot, the two knives in my pockets, and the small revolver tucked into the inner pocket of my leather jacket. However, he doesn't notice the razor blade in the hem of my jeans or the coil of wire sewn into my jacket collar. Camp Largo taught me well. Let's go, he says when he's satisfied that I'm clean, and I follow him out of the hotel and into an armored limo. The ride to the airport passes in silence. I expect Kent to deliver me to Esquerra's private plane and take off, but he goes in with me. You're piloting, I ask, and he nods curtly. Esquerra requested that I bring you myself. He doesn't sound too pleased about that, and I smile as I take a seat on the cream-colored leather couch in the cabin. Kent being pissed about the disruption to his routine is a bonus, as far as I'm concerned. I can't yet kill him for letting Sarah crash, but I can certainly enjoy screwing up his plans. I spend part of the 11-hour flight napping, and the rest emailing with my team. They're on their way to Columbia, too, and will be waiting for me outside the compound as per our NOVOC-approved plan. If all goes well, I won't need them. But if things go sideways, they might be able to help get me out. Assuming I'm still alive to get out, that is. Esquerra's enormous estate is in the southeast part of Columbia, right on the edge of the Amazon rainforest. It's night when we land on the small airstrip inside the compound, and the humid air is warm and completely still as we step off the plane. I recognize the driver of the car waiting for us. He was one of the guards here when I was in Esquerra's employ. Hey, Diego, I greet him, and he grins, white teeth flashing. Sokolov, never thought I'd see you again, man. His Spanish accent is not as thick as I remember, but still quite noticeable. What have you been up to? Then he notices the blonde man at my side. Hey, Lucas, where's you? Just drive, Kent snaps, getting into the car, and I follow suit. Looks like we're dispensing with the niceties. Oh, well. Instead of bringing me to the mansion where Esquerra and his wife reside, Diego takes us to a shed on the outer edge of the compound. I recognize the place. It's where I once helped Esquerra interrogate his enemies, and despite myself, a chill roughens my skin. There's nothing to prevent the Colombian arms dealer from stringing me up and trying to torture the name of the traitor out of me. Nothing but the fact that Esquerra knows me, and hopefully realizes I won't be easy to crack. He steps out of the shed as Kent and I get out of the car, and as the headlights of the car illuminate his face, I see that he still has movie star looks, even with the artificial eye that replaced the one gouged out by his enemies. I haven't seen him since that time. I knew he'd be pissed over the method of his rescue, so I left before he could have me killed. But he's the same as I remember. Still dangerous as fuck, and lacking all empathy, except when it comes to his wife. And now possibly his infant daughter. You've got balls, he says softly, stopping in front of me. His English is of the American variety, without a trace of a Spanish accent. His mother was American, I recall, a model of some kind. I wanted to talk to you in a secure location, I say, meeting his piercing blue gaze without flinching. I'm not afraid, though I probably should be. Julian Esquera is one of the cruelest men I know, a true sadist. I've seen him skin men alive and take great pleasure in it, and I've often wondered how his young wife handles that aspect of her husband's nature. He loves her, but I doubt he spares her. Why? He asks in that same lethally soft tone. Why would you want to come here, of all places? Because I want to make a deal with you, I say calmly, as Kent walks over to stand next to Esquera. And I'm certain Novak doesn't have eyes and ears here. As I say this, I'm cognizant of Diego sitting in the car with the motor still running, likely to produce enough noise to drown out our conversation. It looks like Kent is the only person my former employer fully trusts. You think Novak doesn't know you approached Lucas? Esquera says, his mouth twisting derisively. That he wasn't notified the moment my plane took off with you on it? Oh, he was. I smile coldly. In fact, he knew about my plan all along. Neither Kent nor Esquera blink, but I can sense their surprise. He knew you were going to double-cross him, Kent asks, frowning. Yes. I told him that as soon as he disclosed the name of the asset. Esquera's jaw flexes. You told him you were going to betray him? Not exactly. I told him I was going to pretend to betray him in order to gain access to your compound. He knows about the deal I told Kent I want to make. Peace with you and $100 million for the name of Novak's asset. Kent's frown deepens, but Esquera tilts his head, regarding me thoughtfully. The deal you told Kent you want to make, he says slowly, which, I presume, is not the actual deal you're after. Correct. I become aware of painful tension in my neck and shoulders and consciously relax those muscles. Or at least it's not the full deal. Esquera folds his arms over his chest. What is the full deal, then? I will give you Novak's asset inside your compound, and I'll deliver to you Novak himself, so you'll never have to worry about him again. Esquera's eyes narrow. In exchange for what? The peace and the $100 million I already mentioned. And just one other thing. What thing? Kent asks, not bothering to hide his curiosity. Amnesty, I say, looking from the Colombian arms dealer to his partner and back. I want global amnesty for all crimes of which I'm being accused, as well as immunity from further prosecution. I want to be taken off all the wanted lists, and I want you to make it happen.
Chapter 32. Sarah. I dream of him again that night. He comes to me like a phantom, shrouding me in his darkness, holding me tight as I weep and struggle to free myself. I don't know if I'm fighting him or my own craving, but either way, before long I lose. I meld into him, let his darkness surround me, chasing away all loneliness and light. He takes me then, driving into me with punishing fury, and I embrace him, screaming his name as my body convulses with torrid pleasure, with bliss so agonizing and exquisite, it threatens to tear me apart. We make love over and over again, until I'm drained and sore, until I have nothing more to give, and he leaves. Leaves because he no longer wants me, because he's bored with me. I wake up with my pillow drenched with tears, and my sex slick and throbbing with need. I know the dream was just a manifestation of my fears, that none of it was real, but I still feel shattered, destroyed by Peter's rejection, by the return of the terrible loneliness that's my companion at night. Getting up, I find my handbag and fish out the note Peter left for me. It's getting worn around the edges, so I smooth it out as I open it and read the words, repeating them to myself over and over again. Remember, Petichka, for as long as we're both alive. I bring the note with me and put it under my pillow before going back to sleep. Peter is coming. I have to believe that. One way or another, he'll be back for me.
Chapter 33, Peter. Esguerra stares at me, as if unable to believe his ears, then lets out a sharp bark of laughter. Amnesty and immunity for you? Kent remains silent at his side, but I see the comprehension in his gaze. He knows what this is about. He and Yulia have seen me with Sarah. Actually for me and my guys, I tell Esguerra. They're not as popular with the law enforcement, but they're still on their shit lists. You get your CIA friends to get us off those lists, and you can forget about Novak for good. Really? He says, still chuckling. Assuming I could even perform this miracle for you, since when do you give a fuck about being hunted? Kent could answer that, but to my relief he keeps his mouth shut as I say, that's none of your business. This is the deal I'm offering. Take it or leave it. All traces of humor disappear from Esquera's face. Fuck that. You're going to tell me who the traitor is, and you're going to do it now. It's my turn to laugh. And in return, you'll grant me a quick, merciful death? Esquera's smile is razor sharp. That's the best deal you're going to get. You know I'm going to get that name from you one way or another. I know you're going to try, and eventually you might even succeed, but it will cost you. His eyes narrow. How so? Long before you get that name out of me, I say softly, my team will activate the asset. Maybe they'll succeed in the assignment without me, or maybe they won't, but that's a risk you'll be taking. How old is Lizzie now? 8, 10 days? Maybe you're not that attached to her yet, but Novak has plans for Nora, too. Big plans. Esguerra is on me before I finish speaking, his perfect features twisted in a feral mask of fury. He often trains with his guards, so he's fast and lethal, but I was expecting the attack. At the last instant, I twist, and his fist grazes my cheekbone instead of crushing my nose. However, there's no way to avoid his other fist, and the blow reverberates through my solar plexus, knocking the air out of my lungs. If I hadn't trained for this, I'd be bent over, wheezing. However, I know how to push through the pain. Instead of fighting for air as my body demands, I shut out all awareness of the discomfort and go on attack, coming back at him with my own series of blows. We're evenly matched in size and strength, and he's good at this. Maybe as good as my guys. But I have the cooler head in this fight. Each of my strikes is calculated to disable and deflect, whereas he's acting on instinct, letting his rage guide him. I evade most of his blows, but the few that land hurt like hell. Ignoring the pain, I pummel him back, and after a minute, I manage to knock him off his feet. The fucker doesn't give up, though. Instead of trying to get up, he catches my foot and yanks on it, dropping me on top of him. At the last second, I twist so my elbow lands on his rib cage. My arm explodes with pain, but he grunts, so I must have cracked a rib. In the next moment, however, something shiny flashes in my peripheral vision, and I react on instinct, grabbing his wrist to catch the blade coming at me. He uses the moment of distraction to land a blow to the side of my face, but I keep my focus on the knife and twist the wrist, determined to... That's enough. Strong hands grab me from behind, pulling me off Esguerra before I can break his wrist. My instinct is to lash out at the new attacker, but I retain enough presence of mind not to struggle. Killing either Kent or Esguerra would be counterproductive to my goal. Esguerra is on his feet before Kent releases me, but he doesn't attack again. Instead, he wipes the blood trickling from his nose and says in a guttural voice, "What fucking plans?" Of course, he wants to know the specifics of the threat to Nora. Novak wants to use her to control all your assets. I say as Kint lets me go and comes around to stand next to Esquera. My face and elbow are throbbing like a son of a bitch, and my mouth tastes like copper, but I ignore it. Given the knife Esquera pulled from fucking nowhere, it could have been much worse. How? Esquera demands, and I'm pleased to see that one side of his face is already swelling up. How the fuck does he think he'll accomplish that? By marrying her. How else? I spit out the blood pooling under my tongue. He waited until your daughter was born so he'd have fail-safe leverage over Nora. He wants them both, you see. Your wife for his own, and your daughter as a tool to control your wife, who at that point would be his wife, but you get the picture. For a moment, I'm convinced Esquera will fly at me again, but he restrains himself this time. Barely. Not that I can blame him. If someone tried to take Sarah from me, I'd chop his balls into little pieces and feed them to the local wildlife. I strongly suspect Esquera is tempted to do just that with me, so I say, I can get Novak for you, and I can do it quickly. I know you're capable of dealing with him on your own, but it will take time for you to track him down and get through his defenses, just like it will take time for you to get the name of his asset from me, assuming you'd even succeed in that. In the meantime, your wife and daughter are in danger. If my team fails, Novak will find someone else to come after you, some other way to get through to Nora and the baby. I've met the guy. He's not going to stop. He wants what you have, everything you have, Nora included, and he'll keep coming until you kill him, or until I do it for you. Something that can happen as soon as the end of this week. Esquera is all but vibrating with rage, but he must see the wisdom in what I'm saying because he remains in place, hands flexing convulsively at his sides. I can sense the war going on inside him, but finally he says harshly, 50 million, and I want Novak brought to me alive. My pulse leaps, but I keep my tone even. 75. It's the best I can do. Actually, I'd accept 0. Sarah's happiness is worth everything to me, but at least this way I can compensate my teammates for the upcoming dissolution of our business. Once I'm no longer a fugitive, we won't be carrying out hits. Deal, Esquera says between clenched teeth. 75 million, and I do my best to get you and your men immunity in exchange for both Novak and the traitor. You get us immunity, I correct. No immunity, no deal. You've been on a fucking global murder spree for years. I can't guarantee any. Yes, you can. Our crimes are no worse than what you and Kint, I nod toward the blonde man, silently observing the proceedings, do every day, and no one touches you. Make it happen, Julian. Call in whatever favors you need to, and I will give you Novak on a silver platter. Esquera stares at me, fingers still twitching. All right, he says after a moment, his tone noticeably calmer. You've got yourself a deal. Now tell me who the traitor is. I assess his expression and make a split-second decision. Bring me to Nora, and I will. Esquera's face hardens, and Kint noticeably tenses, likely getting ready to restrain him. Why? Esquera grits out. What the fuck does she have to do with it? Nothing, except she might like to know, I say evenly. And once she knows, I think she'll have a problem with you killing me despite the deal we just made. His nostrils flare. You calling me a liar? I shrug. You'd do anything to protect your family, as I would mine. In any case, I haven't forgotten that it was your wife who came through with my list, not you. Take me to see Nora, and I'll tell you both what I know. On that, you have my word. And I wait, muscles coiled for combat, as Esquera makes his decision. Chapter 34, Peter. I'm frisked from head to toe 5 more times, twice by Kent and Diego, and once by Esquera himself. On the 3rd search, they find the razor blade and the string, so I'm left truly weaponless, if one ignores my body and its capabilities, that is. The ride to Esquerra's mansion passes in explosive silence, and I know it would take the tiniest spark to set off my host. He's as edgy as I've ever seen him, the violence inside him on the verge of boiling over. A contingent of 20-some guards meets us at the white colonial-style mansion and follows us into the tastefully decorated living room. Esquerra leaves me and Kent with them and disappears upstairs, presumably to wake his newly postpartum wife. With a traitor on the loose, he couldn't wait until morning. For a couple of minutes, all I hear are the guards breathing and shifting from foot to foot. Then a baby's cry pierces the silence, the sound strong and sweet and so familiar my heart clenches in my chest. Pasha used to wail like that when he was an infant. It was his hungry cry, a demand for food that was always met within minutes. The grief that hits me is as sharp as in the beginning, during those dark days when rage was the only thing that kept me going. For a second, I can't breathe from the pain of it, from the agony so acute it feels like a blade through my spine. My son, my little boy who never got the chance to grow, to go from toy cars to the real thing. If I had any qualms about what I'm doing, they evaporate in this moment. I'm double-crossing a client, but it's worth it. Even without the deal I made with Esquerra, I'd never hurt that helpless baby. Not with Pasha's face fresh in my mind. It takes a couple of minutes before the crying stops, and nearly a half hour before Esquerra returns, his arm wrapped around a petite, dark-haired girl dressed in a thick terry cloth robe that covers her from head to toe. Esquerra's very own obsession. Nora, his wife. Her small face lights up when she sees me. Unlike her husband, she bears no ill will for the rescue that endangered her, nor should she, as it was her idea. "Peter!" She makes as though to come forward to greet me, only to be restrained by her husband's possessive grip. Sheepishly, she stops and smiles instead. "How have you been?" "Fine, thank you. Despite the guards all around us and my face feeling like a giant bruise from Esquerra's pummeling, I can't help smiling back. It's hard to believe someone this young and delicate-looking could be a mother, or survive someone as ruthless as Esquerra. Congratulations on the recent addition to your family." Her smile widens.
"Thank you. I'd introduce you, but you know..."
She glances up at her husband, whose thunderous expression grew even more forbidding during our exchange. Sure enough, he's reached the end of his patience. Tucking his small wife tighter against his side, he asks with lethal softness, "Are you going to tell me who it is or not?" This is it. Time for me to give up my trump card. Despite Nora's presence in the deal we made, he might still order me killed as soon as he learns the name. Oh well, no risk, no reward. Meeting Esquerra's icy gaze, I say calmly, "I don't know her name, but it's your pediatrician. She is Novak's asset."
Chapter 35. Sarah. "You know, Joe has been asking about you," Mom says, smearing the honey I brought from the farmer's market on her toast. "You haven't heard from him recently, have you?" "Mom, please." I fight the urge to roll my eyes like an overgrown teenager. For whatever reason, our Saturday morning breakfast is when this topic inevitably comes up. "He's just being nice, that's all. There's nothing between us, I promise." "But why not, darling?" Lines of concern crease Mom's forehead as Dad sighs into his coffee. "You've been back for almost 9 months, and you have yet to go on a single date with anyone. You don't owe that criminal anything. You know that, right? Clearly, whatever you two had is over, and you have to move on. He won't be back." "He will, judging by that note, but I can't tell my parents about that. Despite my best efforts to convince them that I was with my abductor voluntarily, and the whole FBI manhunt was a big misunderstanding, Peter will always be that criminal to them. I don't know if it's because they somehow caught wind of my official story to the FBI, Or they just have a normal, law-abiding citizen's distrust of anyone on the outs with the authorities. But they're convinced that Peter is evil, and whatever feelings I had for him were of the Stockholm Syndrome variety. Not that they're all that wrong. At least, they wouldn't have been wrong 9 months ago. My attraction to Peter was unnatural and toxic, and I fought against it with everything I had. I fought up until the very end, when I nearly lost my life in that crash. No, that's not entirely true. It was up until he put my needs above his own, and let me go. That was the true turning point for me, though it's only recently that I've let myself think about that. About the fact that I've somehow managed to accept the feelings I've developed for my husband's killer. That when I think about him now, he's Peter in my mind. The man who loves me, not the man who murdered George. My parents don't know about that last part. At least I hope they don't. But they still hate Peter for keeping me away from them for so long. They think he's as dangerous as the FBI say, and it makes me sick to think how upset they'll be when Peter steals me away again. Still, I can't stop myself from wanting it. From wanting him and everything he is. I'm just not ready, Mom, I tell her, and get up to pour myself more coffee. Please understand. I'm still in love with Peter, and when it's all resolved, he will be back. You'll see. And with that, I change the topic, launching into a story about my latest performance with my band. It's better than continuing to lie. Nothing will ever be resolved, because there is no misunderstanding. Peter is a criminal, and when he returns, it will be to take me with him. To take me away for good.
Chapter 36, Peter. I spend the night in the shed where Esguerra keeps his prisoners, with one ankle chained to the metal ring in the middle of the floor. Just a precaution, Kent explained when the guards locked the chain in place. Not that we don't trust you. Right. The chain is about 2 meters long, which means I can lie down on the cot the guards dragged into the shed, so all in all, it's not that bad. I'd obviously rather not be chained, but considering what I just saw Esguerra do to the pediatrician, I'm not complaining. It'll take a while to get the woman's screams out of my mind. She cracked instantly, pretty much as soon as the Esguerras, accompanied by me and the guards, entered her room. I don't know what she expected, to win brownie points for her honesty, but she admitted her guilt right away, profusely apologizing to both Esguerra and his wife, swearing that she meant no real harm, that she didn't really know them or Lizzie when she took the bribe. It's like she thought that once she confessed, all would be forgiven and forgotten, that being fired without a reference was the worst that could happen to her. Maybe because I watched Esguerra literally fillet the idiot when Nora left to feed the baby, or maybe because I'm so close to my goal, but my sleep is again restless, filled with nightmares. Twice I dream of finding my son's body in a pile of corpses, and at least twice more that body turns out to be Sarah's. Still, by morning, I'm bleary-eyed but cautiously optimistic. The fact that I'm still alive is encouraging, a sign that Esguerra might stick to his side of the bargain. There are no guarantees, of course, but I suspect Nora has a fair amount of sway with her husband these days, plus he owes me for the pediatrician. In any case, I'm not surprised when Esguerra and Kent show up together to unchain me. "What's your plan?" Esguerra asks, as Kent unlocks the manacle around my ankle. "How are you going to get him? You realize that the moment you show up without Nora and the baby in tow, he'll know you double-crossed him. That, or you failed. Either way, he won't be pleased." I take a deep breath. Here comes another tricky part. "Yes, I've considered that. And that's why I need to borrow your wife for this part of the operation. She'll be in no..." "Absolutely not." Esquire's jaw muscles twitch. "Nora is not stepping a foot off this compound." "Disappointing, but not unexpected." "Okay, then do you think you can find somebody who looks like Nora, at least a little bit?" Esguerra frowns, and I sense he's about to say no when Kent says, "There's no one on the estate, but I can have the guards scour the nearby settlements for a potential candidate. It shouldn't be that hard to find a dark-haired girl about Nora's size. Her coloring is not exactly unusual in these parts." "That's true. If we needed a body double for Kent's blonde, blue-eyed wife, we'd be in trouble. But Nora is part Mexican, with dark eyes and a tan complexion." "You might want to look for someone really young," I suggest. "Maybe a schoolgirl of some kind, to match Nora's build. Like I started to tell you, she won't be in any danger. I just need Novak to find out that I got off the plane with a woman resembling Nora and her infant in tow. A doll will do for the latter. The girl will just need to keep it wrapped up tight." Kent looks at Esguerra, and he nods. "Do it. And if possible, find an infant as well. We don't want this to fall apart over a doll." I open my mouth to refuse, but then I decide against it. I didn't lie about the lack of danger to Nora, so we might as well use an actual child. Whatever it takes to bait the trap and end Novak for good. 8 hours later, I leave the compound on foot, armed with an M16 that I stole from a guard, and with a terrified 16-year-old and her 2-month-old sister in tow. The girls' family will be well compensated for their acting gig, but the prospect of pretty clothes and tuition money for college is not enough to keep the 16-year-old calm. She's scared out of her mind, and that's perfect. The real Nora would be as well. Kent's guards found a teenager who resembles Mrs. Esguerra to an uncanny degree, at least from the back and side. From the front, the girl's face is rounder, with a thicker nose and smaller, deep-set eyes, so we used makeup to disguise those features. Thanks to skillfully applied eyeshadow, blush, lipstick, and dark-toned foundation, Nora's doppelganger now sports 2 black eyes, a split lip, and several yellowish bruises that disguise the childish fullness of her cheeks. She speaks a little bit of English, too, but her accent is thick, so we told her not to talk under any circumstances. "You can either cry or be silent," Esguerra instructed her, and the girl nodded, chin quivering.
"Sí, señor, I be silent."
So far, she's kept her word. We've been trudging through the jungle for over 2 hours, with her holding her screaming baby sister the entire time, and she hasn't uttered a single complaint, though there's much to complain about. It hasn't rained today yet, and the humid heat is stifling. The air so thick it feels like a wet blanket on the skin. We had the girl put on one of Nora's usual outfits, a casual white sundress and a pair of flat sandals, and I can see the painful welts on her feet when she stepped into an ant pile a couple of miles back. We're both dripping with sweat, and tiny gnats buzz all around us, biting every centimeter of exposed flesh. This is sheer misery, and that's a good thing. It looks more authentic that way. After another torturous hour, we meet up with my guys at the designated rendezvous point. I can see the shock on their faces as I push the girl forward with the crying infant clutched tightly against her chest. "You made it out." Jan's disbelieving gaze swings from me to my hostage and back.
"You actually fucking did it."
"Yep, wasn't easy, but here we are." My Nora substitute remains silent, giving a good imitation of a traumatized, terrified captive. Her waterproof makeup smeared a little during our journey, but she still looks believably bruised and beaten, her dark gaze dulled by dehydration and exhaustion. None of my guys have seen the real Mrs. Esguerra, only pictures of her, so they have no reason to doubt her authenticity. The bruises are doing their job. The baby keeps crying, and I make a mental note to give her the bottle of formula I had my guys purchase for the plane, just in case Nora had trouble breastfeeding. We got diapers on the plane, too, along with other baby paraphernalia. "Is he dead?" Anton asks in Russian, and I nod, glancing at the girl as though concerned about her reaction. "Yeah, I got the bastard." She might not know that yet, though, so keep it on the down low. She fought like a witch for that baby, as is. Ilya looks disgusted, but doesn't say anything as we head for the plane. He doesn't like what I'm doing, and I can't blame him. Stealing a newborn and her newly postpartum mother feels wrong, even to remorseless killers like us. And that's exactly what I'm counting on. The subtle disapproval emanating from my men will give this operation the authentic edge it needs. I want Novak to feel the discord among us. I want him to sense the reluctance of my guys to hand over a traumatized young woman and her baby into his cruel, greedy grasp. Chapter 37, Peter. I give the formula to the girl as soon as we're on the plane, and she feeds her baby sister, shooting frightened looks at us the entire time. She's overdoing it a bit. The real Mrs. Esquera wouldn't let her fear show. But since my guys don't know Nora and everything she's been through, it works.
How did you do it?
Jan asks quietly, when the baby finally falls asleep and the girl has calmed down enough to look out the window instead of at the couch where I'm sitting with the twins.
How did you get Esquera?
I shot him. My reply is curt and matter-of-fact, but I'm not going to make up an elaborate story for this. Blew his head off.
Did you get the proof?
Ilya asks, frowning. Because Novak will need... Here. I pull out a phone that I also stole from a guard and show a picture of a dark-haired man lying sprawled on the ground in a pool of blood. Half of his skull appears to be missing, but the other half is unmistakably Esquera. It took an hour to get a shot that good. For all his male model looks, my former employer sucks at posing. Jan looks at me, then at the picture and back at me. I stare back at him stonily. Can he tell that the blood is ketchup mixed with a lot of dirt, or that the missing half of the skull is Nora's skilled photoshopping? I know the picture is fake, so it's hard for me to be objective. To my relief, Jan hands the phone back to me without saying anything, and Ilya turns away, focusing on transferring the bribe to the Serbian air controller's private bank account in Switzerland. It's how we get in and out of that country, and many others, U.S. included. It's tempting to talk to my guys and tell them the real plan, but I refrain. I can't take the risk that they might balk at the last minute. We've built a lucrative business on the strength of our reputation, and what I'm about to do, double-cross a paying client, more or less ensures there will be no further job offers. We've talked about retiring one day, but I don't know if they're ready for that day to be now. In any case, if all goes well, my team won't suffer financially. In addition to Novak's $100 million, half of which is already in our bank accounts, we'll have the $75 million payment from Esquera. Even if we don't get the other half from Novak before I nab him, we'll have enough for the rest of our lives. All we need is to get through this. A few more days, and I'll have Sarah. I can't fucking wait. Ilya and I meet Novak in his warehouse just outside Belgrade, as per his request. As usual, he arrives with a full contingent of mercenaries and enough firepower to level a small building.
Where are they?
He demands as soon as he sees us standing there.
You said you had them. Where are they?
Safe and secure with my team, I say, and pull out the guard's phone to show him the photo we took an hour ago. They're of the surrogate Nora and her infant, surrounded by my men and looking all bruised and fragile. He snatches the phone from me and studies them with undisguised lust before looking up at me. Is Esquera here? I take the phone from him and flip through the Nora photos to the one of Esquera in a puddle of ketchup. Head blown off. Novak's pale eyes glint.
Good job. I knew I could count on you. Now take me to Nora and the child.
I cross my arms over my chest. Payment first. That $50 million might not be necessary, strictly speaking, but it would definitely be nice to have. Novak's mouth thins, but he picks up his phone and calls his accountant. "Make the transfer," he orders in Serbian, and I wait until he nods at me, then check the account on my phone. "All good," I tell him, and glance over at Ilya, whose lack of expression still somehow manages to convey disapproval. Novak must notice it too, because he smiles again. He likes the idea of us being on the outs. He thinks it makes us vulnerable, easier to control. "Let's go," I tell him, pretending to be oblivious to all the undercurrents. "I'll take you to Nora and the baby." Ilya and I head briskly toward the exit, and Novak hurries to catch up to us. His guards rush to form their usual protective circle, but the three of us step outside first. It's just for a couple of seconds, but that's all the time I need. Grabbing Novak by the arm, I yell, "Duck!" and dive behind a dumpster, shoving Ilya in front of me. We hit the pavement hard, skidding on our stomachs as Esguerra's men open fire, riddling the warehouse and all of Novak's guards with hundreds of machine gun rounds. Chapter 38. Peter. The rest of the takedown is lightning fast. Within moments, we're surrounded by 36 of Esguerra's men, and I tell stunned Ilya to drop his weapons, as I do the same. Novak hit his head on the dumpster, and he looks dazed as I tug him to his feet while our captors cuff him and systematically pat him down. While I'm handing Novak over to them, Ilya clambers to his feet beside me. His incredulous gaze swings from me to the men dragging Novak away and back to me. "Did you just..." "Yes, I'll explain everything in a moment. For now, call Jan and tell him we're coming. Make sure he and Anton stand down. We don't want anyone hurt." Ilya hesitates, clearly torn, then takes out his phone. I leave him to it and follow Novak to a black SUV. The Serbian is coming out of his daze and starting to realize what happened. His gaze lights on me with dawning comprehension. Then fury contorts his pale face. "You fucking..." The guard closest to him smacks him in the mouth. "Shut it, pendejo," he growls in Spanish-accented English. I peer at his helmet-covered head. "Diego?" The helmet bobs. "Hey, Peter, how are you doing?" As he speaks, he shoves the newly dazed Novak into the car and shuts the door. "Just peachy," I say dryly as Ilya approaches. "All in a good day's work. My teammate does not look pleased, probably because we're both still weaponless." "They're waiting," he says curtly, "and they'll stand down." "Good." I slap his shoulder. "Let's go." Jan and Anton are at a construction site nearby, guarding the Nora substitute and her baby sister. Their weapons are at their sides as we approach with Esguerra's guards, but their eyes are sharp and watchful. "You have some explaining to do," Anton tells me as the guards walk past us to get Nora and the baby. "A lot of explaining, really." "I know." Ilya and I watch the guards usher the girl, who still looks petrified, toward another black SUV. "I'll explain everything." "What's there to explain?" Jan says, coming up to stand next to us. His green eyes gleam with a cool, mocking light. "That's not the real Nora, is it?" "No," I say, meeting his gaze head on. Esguerra would never put his wife or child in danger like that. Not that they were really in danger, mind you.
"Right," Jan's smile lacks the slightest hint of humor. "So this was the plan from the beginning. Get Novak on the hook, find out what his asset is, and then reel in Esguerra."
I incline my head. "You got it." Anton's black brows pull together. "I don't understand. Why would you do that? And why not tell us?"
"Because he doesn't trust us fully."
Jan's voice is deceptively soft. "Isn't that right, Peter?" "As to why," I cut him off with a sharp wave. "I trust the three of you with my life, but this was a very delicate operation, one that unfolded over many months. I needed to earn Novak's trust, and for that, all of our reactions and interactions had to be as genuine as possible. He's not stupid. If he sensed anything off, just the slightest hint that we're playing with him, all of this would have been for nothing.
It's because of her, isn't it?
Ilya speaks for the first time. I open my mouth about to answer when he says,
Never mind. Of course it is.
What is it that you want from Isquera?
More money so you could disappear with her for good.
No, Jan tells his brother.
That's not it.
He looks at me. Is it, Peter? No, though the extra money is a definite perk, I say, looking from one to the other. Your portion is getting deposited into your accounts as we speak. I turn to Anton. Yours too?
Just fucking tell us already, Anton growls. Seriously, stop it with the mystery. What did Isquera promise you for this?
A life, I say, and glance at the SUVs pulling away from the curb. The kind of life people like us don't get.
Ah, Anton's frown smooths out. Amnesty.
I nod. And immunity from further prosecution for all of us. Ilya's face lightens, but Jan folds his arms across his chest.
Who said we want it?
You think we left Spetsnaz and joined up with you so we could become CPAs and teachers?
No, I think you did it so you could get filthy rich, I say, matching his mocking tone.
Which you now are, congrats. Oh, and in case I didn't mention it yet, the extra coming from Esquera is 75 mil.
Anton whistles low under his breath.
Damn.
Jan stares at me.
175 million gig, all in?
That, and the freedom to do whatever you want. If you want to carry on with the business, go for it. Though you might want to start over under new identities in case all this, I circle my index finger in the air, gets out. Alternatively, you can go legit. Opianist security firm or some such.
What about you? Ilya asks, tilting his head.
What are you going to do, Peter?
As soon as I get the all clear, I'm going to the States, I say, and grin at their expressions. Yes, that's right, to Sarah. This time, we'll be playing house for real.
Chapter 39. Peter. Esquera wants me back at his compound, so after I catch up with my men, I board his Boeing C-17 and accompany Novak and the guards to Colombia. Ilya, Jan, and Anton go separately in our plane. I still don't completely trust my former employer, so my teammates agreed to provide support in case things go south last minute. I don't expect a double cross from Esquera at this point. For one thing, the 75 million is already in our accounts, but it doesn't hurt to be cautious. I also got my team to agree to continue assisting me in the search for Henderson. As the last name on my list, he's unfinished business, and I have every intention of dealing with him in due time. First, though, I need to get Sarah. She's more important than anything. Esquera himself greets us when we land, his face set in hard, savage lines as he watches the guards drag Novak off the plane. The Serbian is barely walking. They didn't bother feeding him or treating his injuries on the flight. But it doesn't matter. He's not long for this earth. Esquera won't just kill him. He'll take him apart. Slowly, piece by piece. I'd feel bad for the bastard, but he brought this on himself. If he'd confined himself to making inroads into Esquera's business, he'd have lived much longer, at least another year or two. But he went after Esquera's family, after Nora and her child. There's no love lost between me and Esquera, but I do like Nora. Where's Kent? I ask when Esquera comes up to me after ordering the guards to take Novak to the shed. Did he go back to Cyprus? He nods.
He left right after you did.
He doesn't elaborate, and I decide against prying further. I still haven't forgiven Kent for what happened with Sarah, but at the moment, I have bigger fish to fry. Did you reach out to them? I fall into step beside Esquera as we head toward a waiting limo. Your CIA contacts? He casts me a sideways glance. I did. And I step in front of him, forcing him to stop. Did they agree? His jaw flexes. Let's talk about it in the car. Shit, that doesn't sound good. Let's talk about it now. His eyes glint dangerously. Fine, here's the deal. The only deal they'll make. You and your team will get amnesty for your crimes and immunity from further prosecution, provided no further crimes are committed. Whoever slips up will be arrested and prosecuted for all crimes, past and present. I consider that a nod. Sounds fair. I'm almost certain I can live as a law-abiding citizen, or at least give the appearance of one. We'll need to be careful not to get caught when we finally locate Henderson, but I'm not sure I'm not the only enemy the former general has. Alternatively, we can make it look like an accident. There are all sorts of ways to carry out a hit without it looking like... And there's one more thing, Esquera says. One other condition that's non-negotiable. What? I ask, my stomach tightening with a premonition as my hands curl at my sides. This better not be what... That retired general, the one you've been hunting, Esquera says, confirming my hunch. You have to let it go, for good. Your immunity is contingent upon his continued health and well-being. If he or anyone close to him so much as gets food poisoning, the deal is off, and all four of you will be on the most wanted lists again. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I suppose I should have known this was a possibility given Henderson's connections, but I somehow blocked it from my mind. I was so focused on eliminating the main obstacle to a life with Sarah, my fugitive status, I didn't even consider that it might come at a price. Well, a price aside from the end of my business and the risk I took by approaching Esquera. Those costs I knew and was prepared to pay. But this, out of everyone on my list, Henderson is the one most directly responsible for the tragedy that befell my wife and son. He's the one who gave the orders that resulted in the village massacre. If anyone deserves to pay for Tamila and Pasha's deaths, it's Henderson. He can't be allowed to go back to living his normal, happy life after what he's done. I can't take that deal. My voice is harsh and guttural. You know I can't. For the first time, some semblance of human emotion warms the blue ice of Esquera's gaze. I know, he says quietly. I figured as much. But they won't budge on it, Peter. I tried. I pivot on my heel and stride toward the limo, the rage and grief I thought I'd buried bubbling up like magma in my throat. I breathe in, trying to calm myself, but instead of tropical vegetation, I smell death and ashes, charred flesh and stale blood. I taste metal on my tongue and see a pile of corpses, of body parts 2 meters high. And that little hand curled around the toy car. I barely remember the first few days after the massacre. I know I got away from the task force soldiers who dragged me out of the village, but I don't recall how or when, or if I hurt anyone as I escaped. I assume I did, because my own people started hunting me soon after, even before I killed my superiors for ending the investigation within weeks. Vengeance was all that kept me going in those days, and in the months and years that followed. I promised my dead son and wife that their killers would pay with their lives, and I kept that promise. I got them all except Henderson. You could just take her again, Esquera says, catching up to me, and I glance at him, unsurprised that he now knows about Sarah. Kent must have told him about her. That, or he heard about the kidnapping from his CIA sources. And once he knew that... It was a simple matter of putting two and two together. Despite that, my first instinct is to threaten him and all he holds dear if he so much as breathes her way. But if he knows Sarah is my weakness, then he must know what I'd do if someone came after her. It's the same thing he'd do if someone went after Nora. What he's about to do to Novak, in fact. She has a life there, I reply instead. Parents, career, friends. He shrugs. She'd adjust. Nora did. I get in the back of the limo and he joins me there, taking a seat across from me. Sierra is not Nora, I say as the limo starts moving. Her roots go too deep. She won't be happy like this. I don't know if I'm trying to convince Esquera or myself, or that dark, callous part of me that has been wanting this for months. That has been telling me to forget this mad plan and take back what belongs to me. And you will be? Esguera tilts his head, regarding me with peculiar curiosity. You think you'll enjoy that half-life, thrive in the cage of all those rules and laws? I shrug. Maybe. It's not a concern of mine, but if it ever becomes a problem, I'll deal with it then. One thing at a time. So what then? Esguera asks when I remain silent. Are you going to let her go for good, or take the deal? I'm not letting her go. The words are instinctive, automatic. Life without Sarah, that's not even a possibility in my mind. The past 8 months have been hell, almost as bad in their own way as the dark weeks after my family's deaths. I'd sooner die than let my Batichka go for good. She's mine, and she's staying mine. A mocking smile curves Esquera's mouth. Well then, he says softly, seems like you don't have much of a choice. It chokes me to admit it, but he's right. I either take Sarah or I accept the deal, her happiness or my vengeance. I can't have both.
Chapter 40 Sarah. I first sense that something is off when I drive home alone after my evening shift at the clinic. No government-issued car follows me home, and no one surreptitiously watches me as I park my car in front of my apartment building and walk in. Telling myself I'm being crazy, that I'm just tired and not properly registering things, I shower and fall into bed. There's no point in worrying about this. Even if I'm not having some weird reverse paranoia. Maybe the feds had to take a night off, babysit their kids or something. It hasn't happened since my return, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. FBI agents are human, too. Still, I toss and turn, unable to fall asleep despite my total exhaustion. I try to think back to whether I felt watched at all today, but I can't recall. Either my invisible stalkers have become even better at their job, or I've gotten so used to their presence, I no longer notice it. The last time I truly experienced that itchy feeling was when I got Peter's note a couple of months back. Could it be? Am I no longer being watched at all? My stomach pitches precipitously. Given Peter's note, there's only one reason why I would suddenly cease to be of interest to both the feds and Peter's hires. No. I slammed the door on that terrifying thought. Peter is not dead or captured. He can't be. I close my eyes and force myself to take slow, deep breaths. One night doesn't make a pattern, and there's every chance that when I wake up in the morning to go to work, at this point less than 5 hours from now, the feds will be circling my block in their gray sedan. I just have to believe it. But the feds aren't there when I drive to work, and as hard as I try, I can't figure out if I'm being watched by anyone at all. I go through my day in a state of barely suppressed panic. Fortunately, all I have today are patient appointments, and since we've double booked, I don't have much time to think. I just rush from patient to patient, performing examinations, writing birth control prescriptions, and discussing prenatal care, all the while reminding myself to keep breathing, to stay calm, and ignore the fact that the feds are gone. That for the first time since my return, I'm on my own. Just as I'm about to head home, Phil, our guitarist, calls to inform me about an upcoming performance, and I impulsively ask if he wants to round up the guys and go out for a drink. It's a Tuesday night,